This is a Stand Up New York Labs production, providing you podcasts since 2013.
Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
Yeah, we are back in the conversation, and as you can tell by the sound of my voice that you're hearing first, is that Damian Lemon is out handling business this week. He'll be back next week though. But this week we are here in the conversation, and we do have a special guest. CEO of Banana Skirt Productions.
Yes.
All right, I got it right, no doubt. Her name is Akina Rockman, and we go all the way back. We actually had a business together doing music supervision, and colleagues and clients in the music space. She was at Violator when I was at Vibe.
Yep.
Which was right next door, so it was like, that was where basically the young people use Violator as our water cooler.
Exactly.
So we would leave from Vibe.
I was always turned up at Violator.
And go over to Violator to get some of that energy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Never know what you was going to run into or what you was going to come away with. Always a good time. Akina,
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No doubt. So tell us a bit about Banana Skirt Productions and, if you don't know, Banana Skirt Productions in New York City. Are you in other cities yet?
No, right now we're just in New York.
New York City is like one of those fitness crazes that, is similar to what would it be similar to?
SoulCycle?
SoulCycle.
Why not shoot for the best, right?
Yeah, SoulCycle-ish, the way that people...
It's cult-like, yeah.
Yeah, it's cult-like. So tell us a little bit about Banana Skirt.
Sure. Banana Skirt is a dance fitness brand, for people who want to have fun with their fitness, learn how to dance or achieve some, or get active after some time away from working out. We use popular music and music videos as a form of inspiration and motivation. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our classes are really reliant on the curation of a playlist. I do the curation myself, being the music supervisor that you mentioned that once was. So we really rely heavily on music as the backbone. For me, I had worked out in Zumba studios and things like that and really couldn't find that that thing that really would pull me in and keep me interested.
Right.
I knew I needed some hip-hop in my fitness.
Right. So you put the hip-hop into the fitness. And so tell me, you were at Def Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were starting Banana Fitness, Banana Skirt Productions.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? When did the idea come and how did it come and how did you actually bring it about and make it real?
Well, most of the time, a lot of times our inventions come from necessity.
Mm-hmm.
So I happen to have been one of many that were laid off in 2014 from the Island Def Jam Universal Mix. My particular situation was that I was a new mom, though. So
right.
I had just returned from maternity leave. My son was 6 months old.
Mm.
And I had a pink slip. So, I was blessed in that I was a contracted employee. So I had some cushion mm-hmm. to continue, to figure out what my next move was going to be. And the inspiration hit me for this type of dance class as a new mother, mm-hmm. because at that point I was looking for ways to get back in shape. And like I said earlier, Zumba wasn't my thing. And,
right.
I've never been at a hardcore Barry's boot camp or any of that type of fitness type of person, kind of person. So I decided, I'm going to, as a something to do on the side, make a little bit of extra money. Wasn't really thinking it was going to be what it is today. I'm going to create this some dance classes that focus on learning choreography for music videos,
right.
Specifically Beyonce in the very beginning.
Right. And so you said, all right, bet, that's a great idea. And a lot of people come up with great ideas in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, that'll be great. Talk
mm-hmm.
to their friends about it, they get all hype. But how do you go from idea to reality?
You know what? I think because it wasn't a lot of pressure on it, you know what I mean? For me at the time, it was kind of like a hobby. I'm going to put this together. It'll be fun to get women together to dance. So I didn't have a lot of pressure. So I really just, you know, like I do all things, I came up with a plan. I'm not a dancer, for one. I knew I wanted to create these amazing dance classes where you're learning moves from music videos, but I was a two-step type of person. So the first thing I did was I went online and I posted an ad for instructors. Well, that's the second thing I did. The first thing I did actually was I went and looked for places where I could actually hold these classes. Mm-hmm. So I went around New York City, I went around New Jersey, and I found a studio in Hoboken that was willing to rent out to me. And then I put an ad on Craigslist. I need instructors who can dance like Beyonce. I mean, it was a little more polished than that, but essentially that's what it said. And got some feedback. I got a couple instructors to come in there and teach the classes that consisted of my friends who would get on the PATH train and come to Hoboken.
Right.
And that's kind of where we started. It wasn't that many people showing. You know, it was a couple of, I think I had like twice a week and I had one class, like so two classes per week, basically. Right.
And then, so you saying it wasn't that many people. A lot of your friends. So what made you say, you know what, I can really do this?
What happened was my friends were saying, well, this is an amazing idea. I would love to work out in this way. You know, I don't like going to the gym. You know, other ways, other fitness, you know, fads don't interest me. They're boring. I would love to learn choreography as my form of fitness because we were burning calories, you know, 400 or 500 calories per class. So they said, if you brought it to the city, I can come. You know, I can get there after work. So I said, oh, word, okay. Well, I'm bringing it to the city. And I found Pearl Studios, which is where we still hold our residency for our Midtown location. And just started started hosting classes there. From that, I think what happened was my friends, of course, being from the music industry, had friends who had friends and, you know, influencers and people who have larger followings on social media. Mm-hmm. And as they started to find out what we were doing, they started to come and post about it.
Right.
And then there was that sort of that planet started to align. Right. And I said, what? Wait, this can be like a real business. Right. You know, I started to do the numbers and I'm like getting excited, like, oh, wait, hold. If I had this amount of classes and this amount of classes and I start to, you know, increase. And then I started really taking it seriously and creating, coming up with formats, class formats.
Right. So now you got it going. What are some of the things that you take away from the people that come to the course that what's some of the feedback that you get?
That's been the most, the most exciting part of all of this, the most motivating, the most inspiring is that the feedback that I started to get from the women and men who take our classes was such that I was changing lives. You know, I leave my job. I hate what I do for a living. But when I leave my office and I come to the studio, I forget about my day. You know, it wipes the slate clean. You know, I've lost 65 pounds since starting your classes earlier this year. I see posts, they tag me in posts where like people, they've met friends at Banana Skirt and they're hanging out and at the club or at a birthday party or
doing their moves.
Exactly. Seriously. Or at a baby shower, you know, so just to see the community that we've created has really been, you know, the golden ticket.
Right. And my wife has started to come to the classes. And, you know, she's been watching it since I did those videos a long time ago.
Right,
From yes. way back. Mm-hmm. So she looked at it, and, you know, she always said, you know, I would do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess, you know, she did one class last year, and I guess coming in 2019, I guess she on top of, like, she on her goals, I guess.
Right, right.
So she's been signing up for the classes. But I guess the thing with her is, like, you know, again, it's not easy to keep her engaged, and I'm speaking for her, and I'm sure she'll probably say I'm saying it wrong, but I'm going to just go for it since we're here.
Right.
But, you know, it's not easy to keep her engaged with something, but
yes.
This, it seems like she's pretty excited about it, especially the Dirty South class,
because
she's from Atlanta.
Okay.
So it's that. Something that she could do that's in her own little lane.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you don't have that pressure of the gym. The gym culture of, you know, everybody's strong. And mm-hmm. Obviously.
Everybody's already thin. Everybody's already
fit
in shape.
And,
yeah.
You know, built and all yeah. that. So I've seen it myself shooting your classes that anybody, you know what I mean, everybody's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Not even if they might not even know how to dance that good.
Yeah.
But they doing it.
Yes.
Or, you know, all shapes, sizes, and colors.
Absolutely.
Did that surprise you at all?
It did. I knew going into it, again, after I started to really, you know, take it seriously, for lack of a better description, I started to see that it was speaking to everybody. It wasn't just speaking to my group of friends, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And or people, you know, like my friends. And it blew me away because we really do. It is a Benetton ad in every single class, you know. And that is so beautiful to see, especially in you know, today's climate. We also have all ages. I mean, we start pretty much our sweet spot is, I would say, 24, 25 to 42. Because, you know, 42 is like 32, right?
That's what they say.
That's what I say. but we also have women in their 60s that come and take our classes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we've developed, you know, multiple formats now. So we have all kinds of classes and we try to speak to and cater to all types of, you know, interests when it comes to music. But yes, that was very, you know, not only was I surprised, I was super excited, and it really made me that much more enthusiastic about it all.
Right. So, like, this week, what's the type of courses you guys are teaching?
This week, we have a little bit of Cardi B, Money, which is really popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
In that class, for example, because a lot of the classes we teach the choreography from a music video,
mm-hmm.
something that exists already and something you've seen over time, like, you know, Beyonce, Crazy in Love, which
right.
we did yesterday, which is always
y'all
super packed.
Y'all still do that.
That never stops. That there's certain staples that just won't go away, and that's one of them. But there's also times where we do things like Cardi B Money, where there isn't a video that has lots of choreography.
Unless you're just rolling around.
Well, you know, we got to twerk it out.
Yeah,
you're going to twerk in a Cardi B class.
No
don't
doubt.
Come to Cardi B if you're not prepared to twerk. That is her former profession. But so that class, you know, our choreographers will create, or instructors will create the routine for that class that you'll learn. But we also have, you know, Ariana Grande, Thank You Next, and, mm-hmm. you know, Christina Aguilera, Dirty, you know, City Girls, Twerk, you know what I mean? So we sort of, we run the gamut, and those are choreography classes. And then
right.
we also have Ratchet Fitness, which
right.
is something that I developed in which we turn our studio into a nightclub.
Right.
So it's in the dark, it's a nightclub, lights, and then we have it sort of classified by type of music. So when I created Ratchet Fitness, it was really like the after party, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I'd been on so many music video shoots throughout my career, you know, at the end of the music video shoot, even though we had worked, you know, however many hours, we still would go out
mm-hmm.
that night, you know what I mean? A lot of times, especially in my earlier days. And so later days, I was like, peace out, you guys go ahead, go into the hotel.
Y'all so cute.
So but we would still go out, you know, after a full day and, you know, after achieving what we achieved on the video set that day. And we would go to the clubs. And I wanted to recreate that because I'm no longer going to the clubs. You know what I mean? So so Ratchet Fitness is really all about a night out at the club. The playlist is curated by myself. It's not a full song. You know, it's like you'll get 2 minutes of a song, just like you would in the club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a minute of a song, the hot part, the hot 16, if that's only that part of the song that's hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of thing. And so we have, you know, Dance Hall Ratchet and Dirty South Ratchet and Cardi B versus Nicki Minaj Ratchet and Drake Ratchet. You know what I mean? And those are all themed out. And then we have our OG, which is what I originally created, which is Ratchet Fitness, which is just all about what's happening in the clubs currently. So it's
right.
a mix of different artists. It's whatever's on the radio, whatever's happening in the clubs.
No doubt. So You spoke a little bit about your time in the music business.
Yes.
And a lot of our listeners, you know, so that chime in, you know, they're doing music or they're on that journey, they're on that path trying to get there. tell us a little bit about your time in the music business. Like, how did you even come to even pursue that?
I grew up in that environment, so to speak. Mm-hmm. My dad owned nightclubs all my life, so I was around that.
And what city was this?
In Maryland, PG County.
PG County.
The DMV, as they say now.
Right.
So we were from, so the clubs were in, he had a couple, but the biggest one was in Landover, Maryland, called the Utopia. I was privy to, you know.
What kind of music did they do in Utopia?
Oh, the hot music. It was the 80s. So it was Evelyn Champagne King. It was, and these are artists that would come to the club, right? So right. They would come and perform. So it was Evelyn Champagne King, Full Force, Lisa, and Cult Jam. I was able to go to certain artists at the, you know, I was about 13. My parents would actually take me, my sister and myself, to the club at night. We would go upstairs because we could look over. From my dad's office onto the dance floor and everything. It was it was large, actually. And we could watch the show. So I actually went to see Lisa and Cult Jam, BBD. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, they weren't going to have BBD, anything near New Edition there, and I wasn't in the room.
Right.
So I grew up around that. And then we would have kiddie disco. So every Halloween, my dad would have a kiddie disco. It was huge. All the kids, you know, lots of kids from all over would come to the kiddie disco. And I, myself and my sister and our neighborhood friends would create a dance routine and perform it for the entire kiddie disco. Can you imagine? You came to a party and you see these random kids just performing for you. But anyway, we did it every kiddie disco. So so it was like Planet Rock. I'm aging myself.
This is good stuff. I never knew this about you.
To. Yes. So. So, you know, that was sort of, you know, my start in the music business. And from there, I went on. And when I went to college, I went to Morgan State University. Mm-hmm. Close friends with Mike Lighty.
Mike went to Morgan?
Mike went to Morgan.
Okay.
Joe Romulus, who worked at So Def. Mm-hmm. James Neighbors, who worked at Bad Boy. So those were some of my friends that went to school.
Who knew Morgan has such a deep music industry?
Oh, it goes deeper.
Alumni.
You know, we have Kevin Lyles. And, you know,
Kevin Lyles went to Morgan State?
Yeah, so it goes deeper. But but yes, and so when I was at Morgan State, I was not necessarily doing anything super music related, but I was always kind of, you know, in touch with it and decided I was going to move to New York after graduation. And mm-hmm. so I started reaching out to the people that I knew in New York. Mike, you know, because also Mike Lighty had moved to New York. He was working for his brother at Violator. James Neighbors was at Bad Boy. And like I said, Joe was at So Def. And then I had another friend of a friend who was at Columbia. Mm-hmm. So at that time, this was like the late 90s. It was all about, you know, who you knew. And to get into the music industry, you had to be an intern. There was no other way. There was no other door.
Or had a hot record in the streets.
Right, but you had to show and prove.
Right.
So I called around, you know, called Mike. Mike, I'm coming to New York. I want to come to New York, you know. So anyway, I ended up going to So Def with Joe Romulus.
Did you?
Yes, because they had just opened their New York office.
Right.
And I was obsessed with Jermaine Dupri. I just thought his business acumen was like barn, you know, like even though Puffy was Puffy.
Yeah.
I thought I would get lost at Bad Boy. Right. So...
So what was y'all working on at So Def during that time?
All Out. Mace had a label called All Out.
Oh, wow.
And he had a group with Stace and Beth and his sister and Honeycombs. I can't remember all their names. Rest in peace. I think Huddy passed away. But it was a great, great time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it was the perfect place for me. Actually, Free Maiden. I don't know if you remember Free. He also works with Kanye. He was over. He actually was running Good when I was at Def Jam before mm-hmm. I was laid off. But anyway, he was running So Def East, mm-hmm. and it was a smaller office. But we were located inside of Sony, inside of the Columbia,
right.
on the Columbia floor. It was just Joe, Free, and myself. So I didn't have a, you know, it was, I was able to really learn and get my hands dirty and, you know, be in the mix. So it was a really great opportunity. I'm glad that was the road I decided to take.
Right.
And then I was still working with, I was still friends with Mike and ultimately ended up working with Mike.
Right.
While I was at So-So Def.
And then you transferred on over to the Violators.
Yeah, because they thought that that was a conflict of interest at So-So Def. They're like, you're at Violator like every day. That's a you know, hip-hop
Violator was
back
fun
then.
To be at every day.
And I was making money because Mike was booking shows and he's like, you want to help me book shows? I'll pay you because I was interning at So-So Def.
Right.
I only made money to eat Pluck You.
Oh, yeah, well, shit. You ain't got no other choice.
Hamburger, what was the place called? Hamburger.
Pluck You, damn.
Pluck You. In Hamburger Haven or Heaven, I think it was called Burger Heaven.
Damn, I remember Pluck You.
That was right? Everybody in the industry ordered from Pluck You back then.
Chicken spot. You know what I'm saying? Not kind of not Chick-fil-A, but you know.
Yeah, it was good. They had the good sauces.
In that vein per se.
Yeah.
So you're over at the Violators you got Chris Lighty there. Rest in peace. And you got the good Mona Scott.
Yes.
That was your world.
Yes.
How was it working under two legends?
A blessing. Chris was like family to me. You know, because Mike and I went to college together, we were just, you know, we were best. We ended up being best friends. We ended up being roommates, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to learn from somebody who had... You know, Chris was in the music industry from the very beginning. He was hip hop. You know what I mean? So to learn from him, to be around that spirit and that energy was something that I didn't, you know, even realize at the time. Right. Obviously, years later, looking back, I realized how blessed I was. And then, of course, with Mona Scott, being able to be nurtured by a black woman in the music industry was something that a lot of people didn't have the opportunity to have, especially such a grounded woman. I tell people all the time, like Mona, you know, her friends were her friends from back then. You know what I mean? Like the people she hung out with were not industry people. I mean, she had, you know, she was cool with everybody.
Right.
But she was not trying to be in a mix. She was not trying to be anything but herself.
Right.
And she was very strong. She had a lot of integrity. And she was... well respected, and I wanted to emulate that. So early on, I learned how to move in the music industry as a woman and not be pigeonholed, one, and also not be, you know, taken advantage of. Or, you know, Me Too movement wasn't really around at that time, but obviously, hip hop culture, you know, there was a level of misogyny that existed.
No doubt.
You know what I mean? And so I really was able to navigate in that space by keeping my integrity and always being, you know, being held in a certain place. And
right.
I thank her for that.
And if you had to pass any tidbit information on to the next generation of women coming into this space, what would you tell them?
You know, I think to be strong, to show your strength, to not be afraid to show your strength, to not, you know, for lack of a better term, to not dumb yourself down, to not, you know, feel like you need to be sexual or any of those things, but not be asexual either. Right. Because I feel like the biggest thing, one of the main things I learned from working under a woman is that being a woman is it is a beautiful attribute.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that brings a lot to the table from the way we think, from the emotional intelligence that we have. And, you know, I think women should pull from that and not be afraid to.
No doubt. And at that time, you guys had a lot of big players. You had LL, Busta, when he was firecracker hot.
Yep. Missy Elliott.
Missy, Tribe.
Yep. You said LL?
LL, yeah.
Then it was Mobb Deep, Noriega.
No doubt. And then you had, then on the tail end, 50 was coming in the
door. Yes.
So that was all big shit.
Yeah, it was. We were super busy, super hot. I traveled the entire world, you know, with the artists. We also had Tweet, who was my artist.
That yeah,
vibe. Yours as well. Exactly. She was my artist. She was the new artist on the block at that time, and you know, I was the Mona and Chris. They were dedicating most of their time and energy to, you know, the larger artists, and so Tweet was my baby. But yeah,
we might have told this story. I might have told this story on the podcast before, but when Tweet was coming out, they had a listening session at Vibe. Like I said, mm-hmm. which was like right next door.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always easy to do things with Vibe and Violator because of the proximity and, you know, everybody knowing each other.
Yes.
So when Tweet was coming and nobody knew who she was, we had like a conference room mm-hmm. listening party.
And she brought the guitar, right?
She brought the guitar. Mm-hmm.
I remember.
And and so, you know, everybody, you know, I always like to be the dude. You know how when you listen to a live record,
yeah.
And you hear something, and then you hear the crowd, and then be somebody like, all right now, in the background. Yeah. I always like to be that person. Like, that's who I am. That's going to be me. You know what I mean? So Tweet was in there. She was strumming her guitar, and everybody was kind of like, okay, all right. Mm-hmm. And I was like, go ahead now, all right now. And I think, you know what I'm saying, it gave her energy. So she was like, okay, bet. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
From then on, Tweet was my artist. Everybody knew Tweet was my artist.
Right.
Any opportunities came for Tweet, you know what I'm saying? You bring them to me.
I love that.
Shout out to Tweet.
Yes, hey, shout Tweet. Out to Tweet.
Nah, that was a good
She's
time.
She's an amazing talent. She was an amazing talent then, and she still is.
No doubt. And see, so basically, like I said earlier, we did music supervision together, mm-hmm. right? And that came about because, again, hanging out at Violator all the time. And Will, Packer, and Rob Hardy were doing Twa 2.
Yes.
Pandora's Box.
Pandora's Box.
Was the second commercial movie, third movie, but their second commercial movie. And,
yes.
And they was like, hey, you know. You want to do the music supervision. I was like, all right, bet. I didn't really know what that was. You know
right.
what I'm saying? It was just like, all right, you know, you need to put some songs in the movie. All right, bet. I could do that. I know mm-hmm. how to find music, I guess. And so I'm starting to, they send me the movie with nothing in it. You ever seen a movie with no sounds in it? Like no music, just no background noise, no ADR, just the talking. That shit is some strange shit.
It is. I remember you showed it to me in that form.
It's like, man, what is this? And then you had to fill it up with the music part, and then they'll put the ADR and all that other stuff.
Yes.
So I'm looking at this stuff, and then I came to Akina like, hey, I'm doing this movie. I need some songs. You got some artists? And we went to Mona. You took me in there to Mona.
I remember that day. I still see that day. Mona was always, and that was another thing about her, she always was there to support.
Yeah.
Like whatever else you wanted to do, she was
like,
it.
Oh, that's so cute, y'all doing right. some music supervision. So you took me in there, and I told her what it was, and she was like, all right, okay. Mm-hmm. I hear you. And then she had stacks of CDs across her desk.
Yep.
And then she just pointed to one stack and was like, yeah, take that right there. And this should be something in there for you.
Right.
Like, bruh.
All of these independent artists who are sending her music on a daily basis.
I'm like, okay. So I took, you know, I was thinking more like, you know, Busta, nah. But it was the best thing because I didn't know nothing about
we're
budgets.
Get some
and,
Missy
you know what I'm saying? Some Missy or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, hook
Missy
a brother
write
up.
Missy write a record for the
side. You know what I'm saying? Hook a brother up. You know what I mean? So she gave me this stack of CDs. And we found
who was that artist?
CeCe Michaela. That shit was like an amazing breakthrough.
Yes.
Because she had the song that perfectly fit the main scene of the
yes.
movie.
Yes. Yes. So I remember that.
So
yes.
She gave me that stack of CDs, and then we went back to your office. You was like, shit, I want to work on this. I'm like, all right, shit, because it seemed like I'm going to need some help, because I thought I was just going to come in and get Missy and Busta and shit. And
right.
That ain't what happened. So fuck it. Let's go.
I was like, oh, I want to do this.
I want in. What's happening?
Right.
You wasn't going to never miss no entrepreneurial moment.
That's been me my entire life.
You wasn't going, nah, what was happening with that? So we went on, we finished that, and we did like 10 movies with them.
Yes.
Yeah. All the way to Stomp the Yard. And I retired us.
Yes. But again, you know, I can say I've really been blessed in the mentors that I've had through the years, because even in that, first we were, you know, first of all, it was Will Packer, who is mm-hmm. now Will Packer today, and Rob Hardy, and then Pilar McCurry.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Who was like the quintessential music supervisor.
She did Love Jones.
Exactly. So. Especially when it came to black films.
Right.
And we were able to, you know, come in there and be under her tutelage and learn so much from her.
Mm-hmm.
And she welcomed us with open arms. And she was never, you know, and I can say that for so many people, but she was never shady. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? She was always there, willing to answer our questions. She dealt with us, and we were greener than green can be. And she was as seasoned as seasoned can be. She didn't make us feel that way.
The problem was that we came in basically from the independent side.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So,
which was amazing.
What Will and Rob was doing was making these, they would get negative pickup deals, which means the studio would give you the money for the film if you were able to finish it on
yeah,
your own.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they were doing these negative pickups, and they had made a couple of movies on their own, so they knew what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And basically,
they had a couple of investors, right?
Yeah,
that can help them finish the
Mr.
films.
Mr. Bronner came in from Bronner Brothers mm-hmm. to help them finish Twa, the first one.
Yep.
And then they worked with him along the way. I mean, but they had these negative pickups, so they didn't need any investors, but they needed to be bonded and insured and all that
yes.
shit to get the shit done.
Right.
So with that, we were operating in our own world. Like,
yeah.
we did shit the way we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
It didn't, you know what I'm saying? It, you know what I mean?
Yep.
We just got the job done. It didn't matter.
Yep.
But once we got to Stomp the Yard.
Once we got on the label.
Once we got on the label, it was different.
When we were selling out of our trunks.
It was different. And I love Pilar, and I love the way what she let us do, and she still let us be wild.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But once we got into the label, into the system, the reason I wanted to get out was that I saw that it was no further growth.
No, and there was no, it was little to no control. Yeah.
No, I mean, you really, like, once you get to the big movies, it was, all right, you got $1 million. We like, oh, shit.
Right.
Before we used to have like $10,000, $15,000,
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
They're like, you got $1 million. Oh, shit, we going to do it.
Right.
Shit. The label going to spend $950,000 of that before you even get to start.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? By the time you start, you're going to be right back where you started from. We got $50,000 to get 100 songs. And so, for me, not that that's a bad thing, but for me, it wasn't as
appealing.
It wasn't as creative as I wanted it to be. It wasn't. It didn't have room for growth. I had delusions of grandeur. I was starting my own company. I was starting yes. the magazine at the time, so it was kind of like, I ain't got time for this shit. So I think, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it was. We both were deflated. I mean, we came from being able to really make the decisions about the songs that were actually going to be placed in every scene.
Right.
To being, you know, placing the song in one scene.
Right.
Yeah. And then saying, all right, go out and get these licenses. You know, these are the songs we're going to put in these.
The thing that tripped me out about it was that, again, we had $1 million, and it was people who supported us when we didn't have shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was people
And
we could not give them, repay them at all.
Yeah.
Like on that movie, for me, it was Big Oomph Records.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Out of Atlanta.
Yeah. Walk
and
It Out.
Baby D had Walk It Out.
Mm-hmm.
And he had let me hear Walk It Out mm-hmm. while we were still shooting.
We did put Walk It Out in the film, though.
We didn't. Just that was the point of contention. So,
yeah, you were dealing with a lot of things on the back, and I wasn't.
Yeah, so Walk It Out. He let me hear Walk It Out earlier that year, and
right.
so I knew Walk It Out was gonna be in the film. And it was like we had this scene called Rep Your City,
Rep Your City,
and
yes.
it had you know Atlanta, whatever. It had all these different cities, but Atlanta was one of the cities. Yeah. I was like, oh, fuck, shit. Walking out is going right there. That's what's it's perfect.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Big Oomph gave it to me for a good price. He's always giving us music, even if it was for free. So I was like, all right, boom, I'm going to repay Big Oomph by putting him in this big movie.
And getting him a real check.
Getting him what I thought would be a real check. And I didn't have opportunity to give him a real check, but he still gave me a good deal. Even though Big Mama's House, he had Walk It Out in Big Mama's House for $75,000.
Okay. I don't think I knew any of that.
No, no.
That was your whole
thing. Yeah, that was my guy. Mm-hmm. So he had Walk It Out in that movie licensed for $75,000, but he had promised it to me for $5,000.
Right. Right.
You know?
Right.
Shout out to Big Oomph.
Right, for the integrity. Yeah.
No doubt. Mm-hmm. But we had got to a point in the movie where the director didn't want any more Southern music. He didn't want the movie to feel too Southern.
Right.
And that's why I had to realize that this is no longer, like, as a music supervisor, the movie is not your vision.
Yeah, it's
you know
not.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's and not. When it's it was independent, yeah. when we was with Rob
it was a collaborative
allowed
effort.
You to, he allowed you to have that
collaborate,
vision.
Yeah.
Like, hey, go ahead. You bring the vision to the music.
Mm-hmm.
But in the real world, it didn't work like that. Like, nah, the director is the visionary. You just do what the fuck they say.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, this movie is shot in Atlanta.
I know.
The scene is an Atlanta scene.
Right. It's called.
This song is rising the charts like crazy. It's an independent song. That song went to number one.
I know.
But he was like, nah. So I was like, all right, fuck it. So then we had that hole in the movie that mm-hmm. we still needed that song. So later, maybe months later, came back, Walk It Out. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is with you with this song?
Right.
Don't bring this song back here.
Right.
And I was like, damn. I was fucked up about it. And then so what happened in the end was that a rep, it's like these people who go to smaller labels,
mm-hmm.
and they'll go gather up all the songs from smaller labels,
right.
and then they'll take it into the movie houses
right.
and rep them. So this lady who repped TVT and Koch,
oh
and
yeah,
those,
I remember her, yeah.
She came in and said she had the perfect song for that hole,
right?
And it was Walk It Out.
Mm-hmm.
After they had told me to get the fuck on with
exactly.
Walk It Out, and then so. They put Walk. Not only did they put Walk It Out in the movie, it wasn't that particular scene. It was in that.
Yeah.
It was around. It was in that club
right.
scene, but it wasn't as the ATL song.
Mm-hmm.
But what tripped me out the most was that they put the song in the movie. They gave that lady a credit for bringing the song, and they gave her 20% of Big Oomph's money that he had already negotiated with me.
With you. I don't remember.
I didn't make a big deal of it, but.
Yeah.
Internally, I was like, okay.
Namaste.
This is it. I am no longer a music supervisor.
Right.
I'm going to move on to bigger and better things.
Right.
And none of you can stop me. You were like, what the fuck are you doing? I quit.
we had so many arguments.
I quit. What you doing to me? You quit. I ain't with this shit.
We had a time with that.
But
film.
But the thing about it is
we
though,
we really did.
Any arguments that we had, they never felt like arguments. You know what I'm saying?
Because you never paid me any attention.
I did pay you attention. I did. I always paid you attention. If you made your voice, if you had to make your voice known, I had to pay attention.
What I will say about working with you versus working with any other partnerships that I've had over the years is that. Saying you didn't pay me any attention is just another way of saying that you didn't take anything. You didn't take me personally.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. No,
like,
I get
you
it.
Never did. And
right.
that was that's why we worked so well together. Because
right.
you were really able to just, like, really get to the heart of whatever it was that we were dealing with and not take, you know, whatever emotional baggage came with that.
Nah, but it'd be, you know.
Because it makes you emotional when you're in those types of situations.
No
because
doubt.
It was a pressure cooker.
Yeah, and then, you know, for me, when they did all that other shit I could take, all the little shit that they did, you know what I'm saying, and the good and the bad, I could take all of it. But to not be able to reward the people that looked out for me when
especially
they looked out.
Especially because we were working with the same production company.
Right.
This wasn't like you were working with a different production company.
Right.
And now you had a budget and you wanted to put them on. This was like, these people have come through for you. Yeah,
they've been riding with
as
you.
As directors and producers.
For years, for 10 movies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was funny because, you know, I was looking up, I thought about Motors.
Yeah. You know Motors was fun, but Sylvain, right?
No, that Motors was no nah, Motors wasn't Sylvain.
Motors wasn't Sylvain.
Sylvain came. He might have been Motors 2. No, he was Twa 3. No, he was.
He did
Motors. Motors 2.
Okay.
Motors 2. Motors 1 was the other dude. I forget his name.
Okay, me too.
He did Gun Hill Road.
Okay.
That the director out there, but Motors was, I felt like a great piece of work.
Yeah.
Because the little bitty budget they gave us, we did some great shit with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We had a lot of good songs in there, and we were able to get a lot of good records.
Yes.
And Rafael Sadiq actually did two. He gave us two records for that movie.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? For the end credits and one and a sex scene.
And, yes.
And, you know.
You're jogging my memory now.
Nah, I mean, that was some good shit because I did it that particular deal.
But didn't we go to the studio with him in L.A., right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. That was amazing.
So we had to make some moves to make that happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, Big Oom always gave us some hip-hop from his Dirty South stash.
Yes.
And it was just like when you come at it and, you know, you like to be able to say thank you.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And to not be able to do so, that hurt me more than any other shit, any other personal shit.
Yeah.
To not be able to give Big Oom a budget.
Yeah.
And then somebody else come and give him the same number that he gave me
on
the love.
And then take 20%, right.
That shit was like, man, please. So when you out here and you're doing deals with big companies, you know what I'm saying, it's a collaboration.
True.
And it's not just your visions. And I think, you know, when I was younger, that was important. You know what I'm saying? What I see, you charge me to do this shit and we going to do it. You know what I'm saying? Who are you to be questioning the shit we doing?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, this is our lane.
Because this is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We do this shit. You see this all these last shits we done did?
Right.
But when you in it for real and you start to see the lesson I learned with Sylvain, who was the director on Stomp the Yard, who it was his vision and I was kind of butting up against that.
Yeah.
I learned in my own business now how to let go. I let go of that part of it.
Yeah.
Especially like I do branded content and a company comes in with a vision, I let them have it.
Yeah.
I add the pieces that I can add. I can give my insights. But once we going, I separate myself from that shit so far back so that I can't take it personally.
Yeah.
I just do that shit. If they got corrections, if they we hate this shit, I don't give a fuck. All right, that's what you want.
I take everything very personally.
not when it's somebody else's shit.
No, I'm kidding. Well, I guess everything I'm doing today.
Yeah, it's your
is
stuff.
Yeah.
It's your stuff. And my stuff, you know what I'm saying?
I'm Erykah Badu with my stuff.
Exactly. But if I'm doing something with somebody else, that's their stuff.
Yeah.
Man, that's what you want? All right.
Yeah. But there is something to be said about, you know, where you have to, in business, even if it is your stuff. And I'm, you know, I'm kind of being facetious in a way when I say I take it personally because I do initially take things personally when I get maybe someone who wasn't happy with an experience that they had in one of my classes or, you know, think a song should be a different song or what have you. You know what I mean?
Talking about like customer service.
Yeah, I guess that or just the brand. You know what I mean? If somebody thinks, you know, something about your brand, you take it personally because you've created it.
Right.
You live, eat, sleep it every single day. But I have learned and I'm still working on it. And I think that is an important, you know, thing to point out is that we should not, you have to separate yourself from your product. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You have to be objective and you have to listen because if you don't listen and you think everything is supposed to just be simply from your perspective, you lose. You know what I mean?
You lose big time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've lost dealing with my own self.
Yeah.
And being, you know what I'm saying? Fuck that. This is how I got to be because this is how it's going to be.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars later.
Exactly.
God damn.
Exactly.
Maybe I should have just built a website. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This is a tough lesson.
Yes.
God, why you do this to me? You did it to yourself, nigga. I tried to tell you. I sent about three motherfuckers to tell you to do a website instead of printing that shit.
Yes.
You shoot them away.
Right.
I let you be.
Right.
You got your prayers. Now leave me alone. So, now, your AKA, it's Founders Day
for
you
guys.
Martin Luther King's birthday.
Yes, it is.
You play.
Shout out to my sorors.
All right. Well, what chapter you play?
Kiwi Alpha Delta.
What's that? Morgan State?
That's Morgan State University.
We don't know.
Yes. Alpha Delta made.
No doubt. And how was that? Like, when you went to college, did you know you were going to be an AKA?
I did.
Did you?
I did. Yeah.
What did you think?
I knew I was going to be an AKA. Well, yeah, I will say, I have been inspired by and, you know, my aunt Linda my entire life. And so, among many women, including my mother, but my aunt Linda had gone to college. She pledged AKA. She was an attorney, which I never wanted to be, but, but you know, I wanted to follow in her footsteps. She went to Morgan State for her undergrad years as well.
So Aunt Linda was that lady that they have on the meme that come with the fur.
Right, exactly. Exactly. She was flying all over the world and, you know, traveling with her friends. And, you know, so she didn't have children at an early age, you know, so she was able to really, like, you know, find herself and do lots mm-hmm. of things. And I just wanted to emulate that.
Right.
And so once I found out, which was at a young age, she was an AKA, I knew I was going to college and I knew I was pledging AKA.
So you actually went to the same school and pledged the same chapter?
I did, though I didn't plan to go to Morgan State.
Where'd you plan to go?
Clark Atlanta.
What happened?
I wanted to go to Atlanta. you know, God directs your steps, and I'm a firm believer in that. And so my senior year in high school, I was all set. I was graduating from high school. I was accepted to Clark Atlanta University. I had a boyfriend who was already at Morehouse. He was a year ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And and my father, the nightclub I mentioned to you earlier, he lost his business.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed the entire dynamics of my life and my family. And once he lost the business, because, you know, he was paying outright for my college education.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't looked into loans. I hadn't looked into scholarships. And I wasn't given any, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I hadn't looked, you know, sourced any out. And once that happened, it was, you're not going to be able to go to Clark Atlanta. But we can get you into Morgan State.
Morgan is in Maryland?
Morgan's in Maryland,
so it's
which
in
is
state.
Where I'm from. It's right. in state. My aunt had graduated from there. She was friends with the president of the school at the mm-hmm. time. It was already past, like, the time of, you know, applying and things like that, so she could just make a phone call.
Hey, now go where you celebrate it.
I was pissed. I was not happy. I said, you know what, forget it. I'm not going to college at all. That's exactly what I said. You know, I had a boyfriend at Morgan.
I got somebody in Atlanta waiting on me. Y'all fucking up my life right now.
Exactly.
Fuck your club. Shit.
Exactly. What's going on with the business? What, you gonna get it back? What's happening? So
none of your business. Take your ass on down there to Morgan and shut up.
Right. It was a very trying time for my family, but we persevered. We made it through. I survived. I went to Morgan State, which, you know, was I don't know what it would have been like if I went to Clark Atlanta, but it was, you know, an amazing experience. I have amazing line sisters, friends from college. It brought me to New York
mm-hmm.
To enter the music industry where I was, you know, where I worked for, 15 and 17 years. I mean, not only did I work at Violator Management, from Violator Management, I went on to Boost Mobile Rock Corps, where I was the director of marketing, and, you know, we did some amazing things there. Mm-hmm. I worked with Chris really closely with Chris Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I went on to translation. Well, I worked for the Arnell Group with Peter Arnell and Steve Stout.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve Stout.
I forgot you were the translation.
Yeah, when Steve
left. Started up Translation back then.
Yeah, when Steve left Arnell Group, he created Translation, and I went over to Translation, and I worked on some amazing projects. I did the TI Chevy project, which eventually we had to pull because he got in trouble, and it was a whole big thing.
Well,
but
know,
we did the, you know, Top Back. Which was an amazing, we had an amazing program. We did Mary J. Blige and GM. We did Jay-Z Blue, which never made it to the light of day, but we were working on
it. What was that?
It was a color.
No, I know he secured the color.
He
trademarked a specific color. They actually used it on one of the Benzes one time.
Oh, they did?
On C-Class.
Okay, well, this was that must have been after my time there because this was a GM deal.
Oh, okay, so they were going to use it on a GM car.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, I think they ended up using it on a C-Class Benz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we had Jay-Z
But he still
Blue.
Own it.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
And then his daughter's name is Blue.
Exactly. Wow.
Yeah, I guess he's locked in. He's like, this is going to work one day.
Exactly.
Jay-Z be thinking long on
you
y'all
know
ass.
He does
like,
think long term, yes.
And this is going to work one day.
Exactly. But again, another example of an amazing mentor. You know, Steve Stout is definitely, you know, a polarizing figure in a lot for a lot of people. But I learned a lot from Steve, you know. And it was a great time. And
no
then
doubt.
From... Translation. I moved out to Los Angeles, worked on a reality show that never aired called I Manage a Celebrity with my friends. You know, I brought people out to L.A. to work on this film. We went to Dubai and, you know, all over the world with that TV show. And then I came back to New York because I realized L.A. was not the place for me to live, though I love visiting.
What's the difference between, because everybody that moves to L.A., tries they like the border tourism. Everybody that moved from New York to L.A., every time you go out there, it's like, yo, you got to come. I mean, you got to at least look.
Yeah.
You know, at least think about it.
Yeah.
You know, I live in this amazing neighborhood, and the school's
my
great.
My neighborhood was amazing. I did love my neighborhood.
So what's the difference between visiting and living?
I was bored stiff living. I was over the palm trees. The sunshine was annoying. I was looking for rain. I
need some piss on the sidewalk. What is this shit?
I like a season. I like a change of pace. You know what I mean? And so, and I was single there too. I think if I was to live there today and I have my son, maybe things may be different, but I was just really bored. I really needed more depth. Mm-hmm. I needed more substance. Mm-hmm. And I came running back to New York after a year in LA. But it was a great time. I mean, I had a lot of fun there, but I was bored. And, yeah. So I came back here, and then as soon as I got back here, I got a call from Def Jam. We're looking for somebody, you know, come work with us, and you know, after you know meetings and such, and ended up working at Def Jam. My first artist when I got there was Big Sean. He had My Last, and that was, you know, the song was starting to blow up. People were starting to pay attention to Big Sean.
Mm-hmm.
He had this song with you know, with Chris, and it was just, you know, an amazing time. And then that song went from, you know, catching on. And remember Chris from Stomp the, you know,
right.
I had worked with Chris with Stomp the Yard and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so it was good. And then I had Neo over there and
Neo.
Luke James and Frank Ocean. So I was like the leader of the new school, you know what I mean?
Right,
and
right,
then
right.
I had Jhené Aiko.
When you had Big Sean, I told you he needed to break up with his girlfriend.
Well, we were happy when he did. But then he broke up with her and got right with from Glee.
Well, the girl from Glee who was the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
The girl from Glee made him look weak.
Yeah, his original girlfriend was from Detroit. And then
when
they broke up, he got with someone from
Every time you see a picture with Big Sean and the girl from Glee, he looked like he's shrunken. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like
I don't think he was that comfortable.
I think, you know what I'm saying? I think he really loved her. Probably more than she loved him.
Yeah.
And he was all in. He was trying to. And no, I felt that before in a relationship. Where you
they say that's what it's supposed to be. They say the man should love you more.
It got to be some, you know what I'm saying, reciprocation. You can't be on the red carpet looking shrunk. You know what I'm saying?
Like, it wasn't a good time.
Your woman's supposed to make you look bigger. You know what I'm saying?
It wasn't a good time for the brand. Well, hey, while you're saying that, do you think that Beyonce makes Jay-Z, shrinks Jay-Z?
Sometimes
I do
too. But he's able to bounce out and pull himself together. You know what I'm saying? So there are times where he looks big, but then there are times where it's appropriate. You know what I'm saying? It kind of like goes back and forth with them.
Okay, so you
and that's good. That's a good balance.
Yeah, the balance.
It's a balance.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like you with somebody and they they just outshining you and you just look real little. And you just look like, okay, you know, okay, what you want to do? I don't know, whatever you want to do. You know what I'm saying? That's how Big Sean looked.
You know, when men are in love, you can't do anything.
And I've been there.
Yeah.
So I can't.
He was going to marry that woman.
Huh?
Remember, they were getting married.
Yeah, he told me, sons, my mama might make one more money than me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been there in that situation, so I get it. But when you see it on somebody who's, like, in the limelight.
And it's always hard, too, when you're at the label or in the management company to have an opinion on their personal situations, because, obviously, we normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to walk a fine line in expressing that. When a man's nose is open, it's pretty much... Oh, and when a woman's nose is, forget about it.
Shut up. Now, and I get it. So, and I know you couldn't say nothing.
But we definitely.
It was
definitely,
just my own little, when you was doing that project, that was just my only little advice. Like, man, you need to get him to break up with her because he looked little.
She's tarnishing the brand.
He looked little next to her.
Yeah.
But Jay-Z had to shrink and kiss the feet, and he was in Lemonade all balled down. But, you know.
Yeah.
It made sense, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah, and he's already, you know, Jay-Z has solidified his brand so thoroughly, and Sean was still rather new.
Yeah, he was still coming up. Yeah. And, you know, shit, as a grown man, shit, I had to shrink down, you know what I'm saying, in times to make, you know what I'm saying? But you had to be able to retain your... You know what I'm saying? Your man shit. You know
what I'm saying? Keep your shoulders back.
You got to keep your shoulders back. Shit straight, even when shit is fucked up. You know what I'm saying? My shit was fucked up. You know what I'm saying? My wife looking at me like, you know what I mean? I don't know what you going to do, but this shit right here ain't working. And I just had to stand there. I stand in my shit like, well, if it don't work, it don't work. But we going to be moving in this direction if we going to be moving together.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And that's the only thing you can stand on. You had to hold on to something.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And no woman wants a man that shrinks down that low. Trust me.
Because shit, man. Because, you know, I learned that from when I was shrinking. I was with somebody and I was shrinking myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was trying to bend myself into a space where I could fit in her world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it seems like the more that I did it, the worse it got.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, this shit ain't working. They told me I was supposed to, you know what I'm saying? You know how people give you relationship advice and shit, all the standard shit. You read in magazines and shit. You got to compromise and all that shit. That's some bullshit.
Right.
So I just shrink myself into it. And then the more I shrink, the more they motherfucking, you know what I'm saying, stick you with the stick like you're lying in a cage. Gregory Porter got a song about some shit like that.
Really?
Yeah, you talk about the lion in the cage and they poke you and they just want to hear you roar, but then, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, Lord. You just reminded me, on a totally different note, I have to do, my son is in kindergarten, and this is his first presentation, and it's on a lion.
Well, he so better be a strong lion that roars. Make sure he know how to roar.
Well, there's an African proverb that we're going to start with, and it's a roaring lion kills no game.
Okay. Well, at least he got a roar.
And so we're going to start with that.
It'd be lady lions killing the game anyway. So.
Because, you know, I just did my African ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
Got my DNA results back from my mother's side.
Where are you from?
I'm from Nigeria.
Ah.
I was so excited. And I'm from the Fulani ethnic group.
Oh, okay. Fulani. I don't know what that means, but
yes.
I know Nigerians.
Yes. You're like, I don't know what Fulani. Well, that's the great part about doing your African ancestry is that they will give you your ethnic group.
Really?
Yes. And so the Fulani have a very deep history. They're not only in Nigeria, but they're in various parts of Africa. And it was an exciting time. It was actually very emotional. My son, really. I mean, one, I wanted to know because once I did it, I felt so much more power. Mm-hmm. I felt empowered in a way I never realized I would. So it was important for me as well. But I also wanted my son to be able to walk in his greatness.
No doubt.
From an early age.
So Fulani tribe in Nigeria.
Yeah.
So all my Nigerians, you know what I'm saying, let me know what's up.
Yeah.
And I'll go do mine, maybe.
You should do it. You really should.
I don't want them to have all in my DNA.
Everybody says that, but I'm like, at the end of the day, I mean, hey.
They already got my fingerprint and my phone.
I took that off. I just gave them my DNA.
You still press the button every time to open it up.
Exactly.
Like,
you're right.
You don't even got to press it all the way. They know your fingerprint.
That's because you have it set.
I know, but you don't think they read it?
Yeah, of course they do.
You know what I'm saying? When Siri started testifying against you in court.
I just weighed the pros and cons. And
Akina pressed the button at 10:58 to open me up, and then we walked into the club. And she said she don't be in the club, but she was in the club.
That was bananas.
Siri gonna be snitching. What you were saying? Now?
I just felt like the benefits of knowing. Because mm-hmm. I believe in the African Ancestry Program and the sciences that are.
So that's a specific brand.
That's a specific brand.
African Ancestry.
Yes.
Not the other shit.
Not Ancestry.com.
Right.
Yeah.
Ancestry.com is snitching.
Ancestry.com does. And African Ancestry does not sell any of your DNA. Mm-hmm. And I believe in them. I just thought it was worth it for my son to know.
When
I don't
want
him saying he's from Africa. A whole continent.
You from Africa? Where? I'm Africa. You black, ain't you?
Like the movie Belly. He's going to Africa. So, yeah.
That's fucked up. Why you do Nas like that? Wasn't Nas your artist?
No, I never worked with Nas.
We going to Africa. Well, where our ticket go to? Africa. Ain't no money in the budget for that, all that.
Exactly.
Old hype. All over the budget. Hype had to learn the same lesson I learned. It was supposed to be his vision and shit. The studio like, nigga.
Nobody knows where Molly is. Say Africa.
You over budget. We not going to Africa. You going to cut the black.
Exactly.
We out. Black.
Exactly. Oh, my
God. Oh, shit. Yeah, so I'll do my... Maybe I'll find out where I'm from.
You should do it.
You know what I'm saying? I've been kicking with it with all my African friends. The African wave is blowing up.
It really is. It really is.
And my friend Efe, out of Atlanta, he's Nigerian.
Okay.
He was a visionary on this whole African thing. And me and him got cool when we was doing Stomp the Yard.
Okay.
So when I was down there for 2 months.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
And he's cool with him, and he's down with Alex Get One, that whole camp.
Okay. Okay.
And so F.A. was like he could do whatever. Yeah. Whatever you need, he could find it out. You need a Bentley, you ain't got no credit.
Right.
He could figure it out
right,
for you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But at the time, he was trying to get into music. And mm-hmm. he started by managing producers.
Okay.
And the whole time, he was like, yo.
I managed producers before, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Who was one of your producers?
I don't remember any of their
names. Oh, Lord.
But they were from D.C., Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
It was a headache.
So he was managing producers, but the whole time he was saying, you know what I'm saying, this African wave, you know, I got to get African and American music together. That shit's going to be, this was 2006.
Oh, wow.
And then he had a few producers that he managed. Then he managed Red One.
Okay.
Who did... What's the lady who wore the beef?
Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm. Rare One did Lady Gaga's first album.
Okay.
So from there, you know what I mean? He blew up.
Right.
You know, he was cool with Akon and all that shit. So mm-hmm. That's how the Lady Gaga connection came into play.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
He cool with Akon. Yeah. He had Rare One. Akon, Rare One.
Right.
Lady Gaga. Poof.
Mm-hmm.
So that blew up, and then, you know. But he always was, you know, talking the African shit. Then he got a producer out of London. I can't think of the dude's name. But he ended up signing to Nicki Minaj's label.
Okay.
As a producer.
Right.
And he was doing Afrobeat cuts. Mm-hmm. He did a couple for Rihanna. He did a couple on Nicki's other album.
Okay.
And that's when, you know, he started putting it in the American play. And then at the same time, the DJs started making that a wave,
mm-hmm.
and shit, you know, what's that? 12 years later, it's here. I'm like, damn.
Yes.
And I see him now. He manages David O.
Okay.
So.
He's doing well.
Yeah, he's doing extremely well. And his vision is, like, what he said out of his mind is real today.
Yeah.
Which is the most powerful thing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And
that he had the stick-to-itness.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So he took it. And so, you know, it's interesting to see how Africa is coming into play as a continent.
Yes.
From different ways. Because, you know, I have a couple guys from South Africa.
Okay.
Which is a whole different part of, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
But a guy I met through this rapper, Damani, who went to South Africa and it changed his whole life.
Okay.
Ended up marrying a girl in Brooklyn.
Okay.
So now he lives in Brooklyn, but all the South African people always come see him at least once a week, seem like there's somebody from South Africa in town.
Wow.
Where, you know, we mixing and cross-pollinating and shit like that. And it's like, it's happening.
Yes.
That whole thing about, you know, bridging the diaspora, mm-hmm. it's really happening.
Absolutely.
On a small
and then
level.
Right. But even on a larger level, because there are places like Ghana, mm-hmm. they just opened up their borders for African Americans to come over and do things there, and a couple of other countries are doing that as well. So it really is you know, the diaspora mm-hmm. is coming together in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there are obviously lots and lots of issues, but there are a lot of good things.
No, it's definitely, it's always good. It's just like when you go to college and you meet somebody, you from Maryland, you meet people from Chicago, Atlanta, Detroit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh shit, they do this over here, and you start knowing.
Yes.
And those places become accessible to
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
So it's the same thing. I've never been to South Africa. I've never been to Africa.
I've been to Egypt. That's it.
But I've plugged people in South Africa, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I'm the man. Mm-hmm. Like, shit, you
right.
go to South Africa, you're going to call this motherfucker.
Right. Because, right.
you know what I'm saying, I've met so many right. people coming back and forth.
Right.
And I think it's a very important part of culture is to be able to shrink the world.
Absolutely. And that's what the internet has done.
No doubt. Word up. So let them know how to get in touch with the Banana Skirt Productions and join the classes. And when they come to New York, come see you.
Yes, absolutely. We do birthday parties as well. A lot of privates, you know, birthday, bachelorettes. But we're at bananaskirt.net. And on Instagram, we're banana_skirt. You can see lots of videos there. All of our classes we post on our story daily. And we post class videos on our feed. And on Twitter, we are banana_skirt there as well. And then we're on Facebook.
Word up. Yes. Y'all can catch me on the gram at Mr. Muhammad. Twitter, same thing. And right here next week, we'll be right back. D Lemon should be back in the house. And until then, tell a friend to tell a friend, and even the enemy, get in the conversation.
The main thing of it all is to be in the conversation.